Welcome to another edition of Inside United. My name is Victor Kubik. Our guest today is Gary Petty. Hello, Gary.
Hey, good to be here.
Gary is a pastor of the Nashville, Tennessee church. And also, what's the other one?
Murfreesboro,
right. He's an author. He's written a few books. He's written quite a few articles for our publications. He's a presenter on Beyond Today Television. But he's written a few books, and the one that I want to talk about today is the one entitled The Mercy Effect. It's about conflict and conflict resolution, because conflict is an inherent part of every human being's life. In the very first chapter, which is entitled Why Can't We All Get Along, it reminds me of the statement made by Rodney King, who was part of that conflict in Los Angeles back in the mid-90s. He just made the statement, after all the violence that took place, why can't we just all get along? That became kind of a hue and cry. Gary, why can't we all get along?
You know, it's interesting you ask that and start with that. This book was actually part of a personal journey. After years and years of counseling people as a pastor, after years and years of my own life, conflict in my own life, in fact, in the preface of the book, I start with, I'm going to talk about principles I have not yet mastered. The point is that why can't we apply the principles? I mean, how many times have we sat down and told someone, here's three steps to help your marriage, or here's three steps to help this conflict that's going on? Or we've sat down and someone have told us, or we know the principles. We know that, oh, man, I'm having this argument with this person, or I'm having some kind of difficulty within my marriage. Oh, I know the principles. I know what I should do. Why am I not doing them? And why am I resisting doing them? Mm-hmm. And that's what led me to this. Why can't we do that? And the conclusion I came to with, after just exploring even my own life, was that the only way we can ever solve conflict is deal with, first of all, the inner conflict we have. And why do we have inner conflict? And it comes down to because we're all in conflict with God. Mm-hmm. That has the first step is having to deal with that.
Well, you know, it says that Christ is our peace.
Yes. Now, once again, we have the facts. We know that. But how do we live that? How do we take that next step? And that's where a big part of this book is dealing with the fact that why we can't break through the inner peace. You know, when we have inner peace, it's amazing how someone can say something to us that normally might set us off or make us angry. And they can say it to us, and inside we say, oh, that was uncomfortable. But somehow, it's okay. We were able to weather through it. We're able to stop and we're able to listen. And those time periods, why do we have that ability? And there's two things. One is, if we have peace with God, which takes a total subjection in a way that we don't like, peace with God comes by being conquered by God, letting God conquer our lives so that we are in such a relationship with Him that we're in tune to the prompts He gives us. God gives us prompts all the time through His Spirit. But we just run right past them, usually because we're upset with somebody. So we're actually not very self-aware. We're aware of, you know, how we feel, but we're not aware of the effects we're having on the other people. And the only way that happens is there's a calmness that comes from God. So that we begin with dealing with conflict with someone else by, am I living a life every day where God is involved with who I am, and God is guiding me, and I am sensitive to the prompts that He gives. And that comes; those prompts come from His Spirit, and they come from being in the Scripture, because the Scripture will be the prompt. We'll know.
Well, one thing, Gary, is we would greatly, highly reward a person who could get people to the point of where they do those things. I mean, I love the things that you had to say in the book, and you know, you read all kinds of books about solving conflict. Have this person say their story, have the other person tell their story, you have a mediator that'll evaluate both things, yada, yada, yada. It goes on and on. And yet there is still conflict. Do you truly believe that if we had this type of behavior, this deeply converted relationship with a peace with God that was very, very tangible, that it would lead to a person who would fend off conflict, that would be able to deal with things that come his way that he's not pleasant with?
Yes. Now, I say that. I can't say I've mastered that, because the problem is, and this is part of the issue we're dealing with, our natural human nature is very defensive, and our natural human nature is actually angry. We all have an internal anger and a defensiveness. We're going to protect ourselves against everything. Only through a peace with God that we know we're accepted by God, and that we know that we have surrendered to God. In this interaction where we're in this Bible every day, we're on our knees every day, asking God, imploring God, that we're able to face these situations and have a better chance of handling it correctly. Of course, the problem is the other person may not handle it well at all. And then it just seems to escalating, because no matter how hard we're trying, they're not doing anything. And that's when, it comes down to techniques don't work if both people aren't in the same attitude.
Well, I would like to kind of talk about this anger and defensiveness.
Yeah.
Because naturally, when we are confronted with something, could be in our marriage, where we're told something that we know very, very well we should be doing, and we take it as nagging, for example,
yeah.
You should be doing this, you should have said that, and everything. And we get defensive, and we pop off perhaps with anger and in a relationship, instead of having that closeness to God of saying that, my wife is right, or what my superior or my friends is saying is right, and not get defensive and start blaming and start escalating the argument, which really what it does is not only does it not solve what you have, but it escalates it to a higher or to a level that you don't want to. And what we really want to do is to be people who will be peacemakers, not peacekeepers necessarily,
yeah.
Those who kind of suppress any type of opposition, but peacemakers.
Right. One other thing about being a peacemaker is, and this is difficult, you're going to be saying, I'm sorry, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because our own human problems are always causing us to escalate conflict. And as we are close to God, and then we can start to apply techniques, we can start to use knowledge. Knowledge without the power to use knowledge is meaningless. But once we have God working in us and we're close to God, we can see where this conflict is going or where it's coming from. We're going to find we still, a lot of times, are natural reaction is wrong. So to be a peacemaker is a lot of saying, wait a minute, I'm sorry. Wait a minute, let me think that through. Give me a minute here. Give me a time out here, because I'm not doing this very well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this, we have to recognize that defensiveness and immediately react to it by, instead of attacking the other person, taking responsibility for ourselves. That the other person may be 100% wrong. That's not the issue. Beating someone with a baseball bat just because they're wrong doesn't help anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's something else that, and I talk about this in the book, we have a natural need to be healed when we're hurt. So if someone's hurt us, we want them to heal us. We also want justice. Okay? So we have these walls we put up in which, unintentionally, we actually make people objects. Think about this. You're at a grocery store, and you're standing in line. You run up to the checkout, and there's eight people in front of you. And the first thing you do is you resent them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in a hurry. These people are in front of me. Come on. And then one person is writing a check. It's like, nobody uses checks anymore. What's your problem? So we start putting people down. We look at people. We start counting how many things are in their basket. Okay. Now, when you stop and think about that, what we're saying is, you are all objects that are keeping me from my happiness. Every person in that store has the exact same right that you do to be there. They have the exact same opportunity to be there. They happen to be in front of you, which is they have done no wrong. They have done nothing to you. But we can work ourselves up into such, a fit over it. We get out and we're honking the horn at people, and we're a bad driver. We go home and kick the dog, all because we see people as objects that are keeping us from happiness. One of the things we do in conflict is we automatically see the other people as an object that's keeping us from what we want, keeping us from our happiness, keeping us from our objectives, whatever they may be, or they're automatically an enemy. Well, when we automatically approach them with that, that resentment and anger keeps us from actually being able to solve anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so difficult, is because we see them as objects. There's a lot of marriage problems that come down to we make our spouse an object that's keeping us from what we want, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, because of this relationship with God, we're able to step back from those intense emotions, let them just sort of alleviate some, and look at that person and think of that person as a person with thoughts and feelings and rights, and I should listen to what they have to say. We can still disagree, and there's ways to disagree. And if the other person's doing the same thing, then there's going to be some meeting of the minds that allows some solution. It may not be the perfect solution. It may not leave everybody happy. That's the problem with the human. It's all messy. It's always going to be messy. But at least it can bring to a conclusion that makes sense, that does something positive.
Well, Gary, let's talk about some baby steps in this process, because we naturally have these things, well, that we react with anger.
Right.
I believe that we need to ask ourselves, do I get angry more than I feel like is even rational? What are some baby steps that we can take? I know one I could see right now is to control your anger, or ask God, or somehow find a way to manage anger so that it doesn't just flare out. And anger never accomplishes anything real good, but be able to react with a calmness, a natural calmness, to a situation and saying that they have a right to be there. I really need to listen to my wife. I need to listen, you know, to perhaps my boss, you know, and not blame others or to blame circumstances for the way you are, but to take that responsibility. Isn't there peace in that?
Yes. Part of it is, and I don't cover this in the book, but part of it has to do with the way the brain's designed. It would be nice if we could cognitively think something out and then the emotion would follow. But it doesn't work that way. Use an example. My son and I were hiking when he was a teenager in the Chisos Mountains in Texas. We're about 7,000 feet up, and I heard a rattle. And I this fear gripped me. I stopped. He ran right into the back of me because he was walking behind me. And he said, "Why'd you stop?" And I said, "Because," and I looked down, and there's about a 4-foot rattlesnake coiled up. I was about to step on it.
Wow.
Now, my brain didn't take time to think, "Oh, that's the sound of a rattlesnake. I wonder if it's a Western rattlesnake," or, you know, all this analysis didn't happen. The rattle, I recognized the sound, and this emotion hit me. And then I thought, hey, that's a rattlesnake. But that half a second or whatever it is, that millisecond between emotion and thought, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the emotion always comes first. There's the problem. The anger hits first. The defensiveness hits first. That feeling comes first. And then the thought kicks in. That's why sometimes you can be upset with somebody and saying something and your brain screaming out, "Don't do that. Don't say that." And yet you're doing it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
What we have to do is become very aware of that we're designed that way.
Right.
So that when the emotion happens, we actually create in ourselves a mechanism where we don't do anything.
Well, maybe what we need to do is to say tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, tomorrow.
Yeah.
No matter what comes at me, you know, from the time that I come to the first stop sign and, you know, across the road, and on my drive to work, whatever, I will not allow any type of things to set off this type of feeling, but take control of my feelings, which include the anger,
right,
and those negative emotions, so that I can calmly work through this and come to something that's constructive, and perhaps even make it a habit the next day and the next day.
The people I've seen best at conflict management, you never resolve everything, but managing it, I've watched them. I'm always amazed at them because it's not a natural ability for me. You know, there's an issue, I talk, you know, and I slam headfirst into it. The people I've watched that were really good at it, they listen, and there's always this pause. what they're doing in the pause, because I've asked them, I'm just saying, no, let that emotion go. Think this through. Come up with something. In other words, they're forcing themselves. So they're, the feeling's there, but they dissolve it. You know, it's like telling a child, I've done this with my grandchildren, they're all upset. Put your hands together. Just sit down, put your hands together, take a couple big breaths and don't say anything. And they'll do that. And then I'll say, you feel better now? Well, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, as adults, you know, we almost have to put our hands together, take a few deep breaths and think through, what is the proper thing I should do? Am I just being defensive? Is this anger justified? What's the right response here? Not what can I do to this person? What's this person doing to me? Which is what we're usually dealing with. What's this person doing to me? But what is the proper response? And the people I've seen the best at this always have a pause. There's always time. And sometimes it'll be a little uncomfortable, maybe 2 or 3 seconds, which is nothing. But it seems like a long time as they sit, they think. And what they're doing is they're processing the emotion because it hits. They figured it out. It hits first. Now I got to let my brain catch up and think what's the right thing to do. It's a very difficult thing to do, but I think that's the very first step. Now, if you have been in the scripture, if you've been praying, if God's involved, you have this relationship, what's going to come into your mind in that, when you get that little calmness and you've ratcheted down the emotion, is usually that, come on, you can't do that. You know, God says, this is what Jesus did. Now, something's going to come to your mind that's from the Bible. So your thoughts now come from there, and that's God's prompt. That's why it's of the Spirit. God's prompt is there. Ah, that prompt, I now have a proper way of dealing with it. Every once in a while, I do it that way. Every once in a while, and when it happens, it's like, oh, boy, this changed real quick. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's and the other person usually responds some because, oh, okay, I'm calm, and I've just said something that makes sense instead of blabbering out whatever that emotion is driving out. And our biggest problem is we're so emotionally driven.
And we pop off with the things that are the worst possible things to solve the problem.
Yes.
You know, it's said that people who want to just take out their, wear off their emotions by just banging on the, with the hammer. They found that that actually is detrimental, that actually hurts a person's ability to be able to conquer their ability to reason and make choices. Instead, it's best to just be calm and be able to let the whole thing seep through and process it and make it become a habit.
And some people do that naturally. Most of us do not.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I feel like in your book here, where, you know, in the mercy effect, that you point out what really can be done. What more can you say about this peace with God? What else would it lead to? We already talked here about being able to evaluate your feelings, to stop and think, to pause, you know, as baby steps, as practical things to do. What else in order to have this peace with God? You know, it's not some magic thing, but no, just really the nature, mind, and breath of God in what we are and how we relate and pass it on to others.
You know, we hear Christians talk about the heart, okay? But sometimes that's misunderstood. Well, okay, the heart is what we feel. We know in the Old Testament, the word heart in Hebrew wasn't just about how you felt. It meant your innermost thoughts, you know, the ones you may not share with anybody else, and your motivations. So it's this mixture of your innermost thoughts, your emotions, and your motivations. What we have to do is have God involved at that level. So we have to be thinking about that all the time. You know, you prepare your heart. You know, the Bible even mentions a couple places about someone who prepared their heart.
Right.
So if I'm feeling resentful towards somebody, they may not be in the room. I'm feeling resentful. If I don't deal with that then by myself with me and God, there's consequences later, either on how I treat that person or how I treat other people. And there sure is consequences in how unhappy I am because I've let that resentfulness seep in. So there, we have to be very aware of the negative emotional problems we have, greed, resentment, anger, hatred. We have to be aware of those. And when we are, That's the prompt from God. Once again, we have to be praying. We have to be on our knees. We have to be studying that Bible so that what comes to our mind, that prompt, that screaming voice that says, stop that, or that doesn't work, or you know, a quote from the Apostle Paul, when that pops in, we become incredibly sensitive to it, and we think about it. We wrestle with it. Christianity is wrestling with this corrupt human nature. We have to wrestle with our nature. What we want to do is wrestle with everybody else. Mm-hmm. The greatest fight is inside, and it is done every day. It is done behind the wheel. It is done with other people. And a lot of it is done alone. When you're thinking about those emotions, when you're thinking about this person was mean to me today, and that really upset me, and what pops into your mind is forgive 70 times 7. You know, and it's like, now you must respond to the scripture. God put it there. That's the prompting of God's Spirit. You must now wrestle with that. It may take 20 minutes to get that emotion under control, but you must now control it in those moments. It's a constant fight with our corrupted heart. That's what this is all about.
And that has to be controlled by a conscious, rational mind that brings every thought into captivity of Christ.
Exactly. And he's given us a mind of love, power, and sound mind. We don't have love. We don't have any power. And we sure don't have a sound mind. So that's got to come from him. So we have to listen to it when it's coming in. We have to respond to God's Spirit. And it is really a daily internal battle that much of it is fought alone, with just between you and God as you deal with these things. So you're prepared to deal with the world as you deal with it, which means you're prepared to say, I'm sorry a lot, but you're making progress. This is all about making progress.
Right. And it's by having Christ live in you, and it's by having him live in you by prayer. You know, I mean, it really gets down to saying, God, help me, please, to control my mind.
Yes.
Help me be forgiving of others. Help me not to be resentful of others. Because naturally, if you don't think and you come to a group of people, you will be drawn to some and you will resent others for no reason at all.
Yeah.
Because of their appearance or maybe what you guess what they're doing instead of having a clear mind. One thing about Jesus Christ, it's interesting that biblically, when you take a look at him, you don't have these immature reactions. That's the one thing that's just so marvelous about the story about Jesus Christ. No, he did not sin. We sin all the time, even by our anger and our lusts and greedy thoughts and so forth. Christ evidently did not have those. And he had a mind that was in perfect control, and his behavior was perfect. And if we can emulate that by having him live his life in us, we're on the way to being peaceful.
And there's an example in the book I use where Jesus is going to heal a man, and the Pharisees come and they're going to tempt him or see what he does, you know, and so they can accuse him of working on the Sabbath. And the man has a withered hand, and it says Jesus is angry with him. And you can tell by what he says to him, he's very angry with him. Now, I've compared what I would have done to what he did. And in my mind, I realize the great difference. I would have looked at all the Pharisees and said, you know what? Here's a man who's got this withered hand, and you don't even love him. So guess what? I would have withered all their hands. Jesus healed the man with the withered hand. He did, you know, his action was positive.
Mm-hmm.
So he had anger, but he had a conscious control of that anger. That's where we have so much trouble. We lose control of it. We know we've lost control of it. And that's where he was so different. His connection to the Father, being who he was, he always, even these human emotions that he would have been experiencing.
People feel that having that type of control is restrictive and drives us crazy. It's not. It actually is a discipline that over time produces a peaceful outcome in the harmonious way in which we relate to others.
Yes, because it actually gives you a freedom. Because it gives you a freedom to say, okay, I have an emotion. You know, emotions are emotions. When people say, oh, stop feeling that way, how do you stop feeling a way? I mean, it's just how you feel. Mm-hmm. So emotions are emotions. We have a human emotion. Cognitively, though, and with the help of God's Spirit, we can reason it out. We can reason out, should I have this emotion? Should not I have this emotion? How can I make this a positive emotion? A lot of times that takes time. You have to withdraw. That's why you have to withdraw from conflict sometimes and say, I got to think about this. And tell the person, looking at them in the eye and say, you know, right now I'm upset. Let me have some time to think this through and I'll talk to you later.
But there are some people who would love to be fighters.
I know. And sometimes you got to walk away. Yeah. And then there's sometimes you just got to say, look, I believe you're wrong and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you can't be a doormat. We're not supposed to be doormats. There are some people you cannot reason with. But if we have, if we're able to deal with this, because you know, you'll feel bad if you can't reason with somebody and maybe they're yelling at you, maybe they're doing something very harmful to you. But when you walk away, you won't be upset with it a week later. It won't be eating away at your mind. Because what we do, we replay in our minds 100 times what someone does to us, like playing an old movie mm-hmm. until it becomes a normal thought. So that you can get up in the morning and the first thing you think of is, I remember when she did that to me or he did that to me.
And they don't care themselves.
They don't care. They've forgotten about it. Okay. They don't care. Maybe they're doing it to somebody else. Maybe they were just having a bad day and didn't even realize they did it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're harboring all this anger and upset and they didn't even mean it. Sometimes that happens. So that's where we have to reason through and say, let that go. You know, put your hands together, take a big breath and smile. Mm-hmm. Let it go.
And that's what I feel like will lead to something lasting. Well, Gary, I just wanted to cover this point. I see that we're hardly got yeah. even to the first step, but you have so much more in this book. Where can we get this book?
Oh, it's at Amazon. Just okay. go to Amazon and you know, go to the book section and type in The Mercy Effect.
The Mercy Effect. And look for Gary Petty, and you can get the book on Amazon. So
yes.
maybe some of you would like to get it, because I have found this book to be just a very nice little primer. It's very laid out in chapters and has some very practical points. And hopefully, Gary, when he comes through here at Cincinnati, we can talk about the next chapter.
Okay, will do.
Okay. Thank you for joining us on Inside United. We'd like to hear from you. You can write to us at podcast@ucg.org. podcast@ucg.org. We're easy to find. Go to the ucg.org website, and on the homepage, on the main menu line, you can see the podcast button. So thank you for joining us. Tell your friends and come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.